Welcome to a podcast episode with Greg and Kate. We're going to talk a little bit about testosterone, specifically men dealing with low testosterone. Then we're also going to talk about fertility and our conception journey and where we're at with things and what's going on. And it will all make sense when you learn about Greg's story and his health. So one of the things that I've experienced, because I'm a coach, is I talk to a lot of men and they always come to me asking for weight loss or they want to improve their performance in the gym. And, you know, it's like majority of people come to me with that goal. But what I have to uncover, what my job is to assess whether they're actually in a state where weight loss is going to benefit them. And when I say benefit them, it's like, are they ready to lose weight? And, you know, if they're purely focusing on how they look, like, are they in a position where they can do that? What I usually uncover, though, is that people are really stressed out. People don't really have time to eat healthy foods. They haven't got good habits. They're sleeping like crap. And training isn't necessarily happening consistently. So this happens with men a lot. And what I don't know what it is, but I think men just being driven to be hyperproductive, driven to be the provider in families, driven to create wealth and financial stability for their current partner or future partner. There is something about men's desire to totally, like, it's almost like not care or become reckless with their health in order to accomplish whatever it is that they want to accomplish with their careers. And it's not that women don't do that, but I just think that women are far more conscious of their health, maybe. I don't know what it is, but I just see this happen a lot. Do you feel like that's true?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I don't know whether it's specifically about careers. Like, I think it is just that it's success, or it's, you know, people talk about like providing, but I think it is, like I've said before, like with work, it's like I've always had this thing of like, I have to succeed. Like, I have to do well because it's on me when I have a family to provide for a family. Like, and I think a lot of men, I've heard men talk about when they have kids, like that pressure just feels like tenfold of everything you do. You feel like that's impacting your kids. But I've always, like through my whole life, like thought about, like, you know, making it career wise, you know, making more money, being more successful, doing something else because of like, well, that's going to impact my kids in the future.
And it's funny, you know, I feel like men have this belief. It's almost like every conversation I've had with men when it comes to the nutrition is they go, yeah, well, you know, I used to get away with it. And I kind of have to stop them and go, but did you? Because here we are, you've got no energy, you don't have any sex drive or very little sex drive, you don't wake up with erections, you feel like crap a lot of the time, you can't sleep properly, and you're plateauing in the gym and you can't increase or improve your strength. And so you're telling me you used to get away with it, but maybe it's just that you didn't pay the price for that until now. Is there a bit of an attitude around like men can get away with it? Because I feel like for women, like you gain weight really quickly. Women are just like tend to put on body fat faster.
I think everyone's kind of bulletproof in your 20s, right? Like, you know, bulletproof in your 20s and you know, maybe into your 30s. It's like, but I think once you get into your 30s, like some of that stuff starts to catch up. And obviously like life stress stuff also kind of increases in the same time period, right? Like, you were talking the other, like, I know you've posted some stuff recently about like financial wealth and like in your 20s, this happens in your 30s. It's like, but you could look at some of the other like life stresses alongside of that also increase with those age brackets. It's like in your 20s, it's like, look, you can fucking sleep all day. You can stay up. You don't really have that many responsibilities. It's like you start to get in your 30s. And for me, you know, my career has gotten, you know, I'll say more high pressure, more demanding, more responsibility into my 30s. And like each year, like, you know, that gets more and more. So I think that your life demands increase alongside of like your, you know, age and success, I suppose. So then you add in kids and all of those things that people start to like pile those stresses on. So if then people are dealing with, you know, particularly, you know, guys in their mid 30s, late 30s, like you have a kid and it's like then you pile on work stress and not sleeping with kids. And it's like, I think it's maybe not until then that it all starts to catch up a little bit. So, but yeah, I think that maybe in your 20s or so, like, you know, particularly as it relates to testosterone, it's like you've still got pretty high kind of levels. And I think for typically men, like, that will start to sort of decrease from 30 onwards. So I think, you know, all of those sort of things compound and catch up all at once.
And then, of course, we don't worry about until it's a problem, right? Like, you know, even for me, there's been a lot of tests and health assessments that I've done coming into prepping for a baby that I'm like, I should have done this 10 years ago. And I was doing just general blood tests pretty much annually. And I'm glad that I found CrossFit and I was changing my lifestyle and I was sleeping and I was training and I was eating well. But, you know, I know for you, you were like, man, I've never done a sperm analysis. Like, why would I have ever done that? We only do those things when we're actually considering having a baby. Meanwhile, it might be reflective of your overall health. And I wish that we could potentially have access to those kinds of tests when we are younger and start monitoring it from an early age rather than getting to the point where, oh, fuck, it's not that it's too late, but it's like you've done a lot of damage already and now you're trying to reverse that potentially. And like, so the client that I always have in mind when I think about this was a guy that he'd already been working with one of our coaches for a few weeks. And we kind of ended up just chatting, generally catching up about how he was going. And he was like, look, I just don't feel like I'm making any progress. And, you know, tracking my food's been really hard. And I'm trying to train at like 5 a.m. and I'm just like not performing very well. So that was kind of on the surface level, right, of what he told me. And then when I really just like asked him the straightforward questions of like, hey, man, like, do you have any kind of sex drive at the moment? Or are you waking up with morning erections regularly? And that was the first thing that was like a, yeah, no, I'm not. Like, I don't really wake up with erections. My sex drive is pretty flat. My energy in general, like, I just put all of my energy into work. So like I stay up late working because that's when I get like, I want to work. Like that's when I get into like, I'm a night owl kind of thing. And you know, people identify with being a night owl or an early bird. And he's like, I'm a night owl. Like I get so productive at night and all of these things. And I'm like, man, here's the thing. I am also a night owl, but I force myself to shut down work at like 5 or 6 PM and get ready so that I can actually prep for sleep. And I can tell you every time that I do not do that and I work until 8 PM or 9 PM, my sleep is fucking just garbage, absolute hot garbage. I usually don't sleep very well. And then I go, well, if I'm not going to sleep, I might as well get up and work. And sometimes I'll just get back up and not sleep or pull an all-nighter and just like your brain doesn't calm down. So it's funny to kind of uncover this shit that's going on with men. And I don't think men are able to talk about it. And then on top of that, low testosterone, it's like, I think there's a bit of a stigma attached to it. And there's definitely a stigma attached to men who use testosterone. So like the idea of like, it's kind of put in the category of like, it's a steroid, right? Like it's an anabolic steroid and it's for dudes who juice up at the gym.
Yeah. And like, I think before we like maybe get into some of that stuff, like I think when you're in your 20s, like, and you know, I would maybe say your awareness around some of this stuff has increased around me and me talking about it a little bit more. And some of the reason why, you know, as I sort of give a little bit more details and talk about this a little bit more, I've been really hesitant to share some of this details and wasn't really sure, but I think there needs to be much more education around it because I'd talk to doctors, I'd talk to people like, you know, to try and figure out some of my health stuff. And, you know, when you're in your 20s, your doctor's not looking at this stuff, right? They're like, I'd had so many different tests and so many different things done. So I just think there's not a lot of probably discussion from your doctor. It's not like when you're in your 20s, your doctor's talking about that stuff. So when you're sleeping like shit, like I did night shift, I was sleeping 5 hours a night. It's like, I just thought, oh yeah, I'm tired and I just need to catch up on sleep, right? But you don't think about like what ramifications that has on hormones and on testosterone and like you're potentially doing damage to your system by mistreating it like that. And I think that's maybe the thing that, you know, when you're 20s and 30s, you don't think about like, oh shit, by, you know, doing night shift, by staying up partying, doing whatever, like all of that stuff, like that's, I think, got an impact on testosterone levels. And, you know, when you look at the data on what's happened to men's testosterone levels over generations. I've got some data in front of me that shows between 2000 and 2015, the average testosterone level in men in the US, it doesn't say what age on this particular data set, went down from 600 to 400 as an average. The fertility rate alongside of that also dropped by about half, you know, next to that sort of declining testosterone level. So like, there's obviously issues in our society, issues in the way we're living our lives and what we're doing that is impacting this stuff. And it almost becomes a really critical topic that we have to talk about, because you keep following this trend. What does this look like in 50 years' time? You know, do we have no fertility, no testosterone in men? Like, that's not a healthy, you know, society, and not healthy for us as men. So that they're probably some of the reasons why I've decided to probably talk about, yeah, a little bit about what I've been through.
And I think, like, you know, we do have an understanding that testosterone is essential for men. It's like the male hormone, and women have some testosterone as well, but we primarily have estrogen and progesterone. And the idea that if a, you know, it's like, I just feel like when we stop and think, like, what if a man didn't have testosterone? Like, that surely immediately makes someone go, well, that wouldn't be good, right? That would be a problem. In the same way that if women didn't have progesterone or estrogen, it's not good. It feels awful for one, and it has a kind of ripple out or ripple on effect of our other systems not operating functional or not operating in an optimal manner, where it's like, you know, if I'm not ovulating, for example, because I don't have enough estrogen, or if I haven't ovulated in a few months because I'm missing my period because I'm under eating, then I have no progesterone. So there's a lot of different consequences that, you know, with our sex hormones being up and down, or just in many cases down, that have huge consequences in our lives that can often express themselves as, like you said, I just feel kind of tired, or I feel kind of lethargic, or like I'm just a little bit down, or you've said even like, I just feel like I'm in my head more, like I'm more emotional, and I'm kind of got like this negative self-talk is coming up a lot. And it's been really interesting to observe you lately. But why don't you go back to like your story?
Yeah. So, for me, and maybe just before I do that, like the thing I was just going to say then was like, that's looking at hormones from a pure biologic standpoint, right? But you layer on all of the cultural kind of almost level around testosterone and toxic masculinity. It's like, I think there's actually almost a negative sentiment towards testosterone. Because if someone's going, well, I want more testosterone, I think there's actually kind of cultural layers on top of that where it's like, oh, when you know you're wanting to be that like steroided up, you know, with the stigma around that. So I think there's actually almost like a, you know, why would you want more testosterone that's attached to toxic masculinity? Like, do you want to be more like that? What makes you want to be more testosterone up, for a lack of a better phrase? Like, so yeah, I think there's a bunch of, you know, complex layers over the top of this for men now, and, you know, and add on top of that, men don't talk about this stuff with each other, that makes this a complex and almost very taboo, or in the dark, in the shadows, people are suffering through some of this stuff. So yeah. So really, you know, I think I, on the episode where I talked a little bit about my, you know, about me kind of episodes that we did, I touched on, I suppose, having some health issues. And, you know, to kind of express through some of that was 2015, I was, you know, burnt myself out from training 3 hours plus a day, put myself in a pretty big hole with training, and was just struggling to recover. I was injured. I wasn't making any progress. All of this stuff was happening, and the wheels were just generally falling off. And got to a point where I was driving to training one day, and I had a sponsorship at the time doing CrossFit, and I was driving to the gym, and like, I kept having this thing in my head of like, oh, I have to do this. Like, I'm accountable to people. And like, I felt a lot of pressure because of that. And one day I was driving to the gym, and I stopped on the side of the road and rang my coach and just went, hey, like I need to leave the gym. Like, I need to stop. And I broke down and cried on the side of the road. And that was kind of when I stopped CrossFit anyway. So that was 2015. And then I spent pretty much 5 years unpicking the health mess and the mess that I'd put myself in. And that was fixing cortisol. That was, I went through a point where doctors thought it was thyroid related, that I was on thyroid meds. And that was probably only 3 to 6 months or so. And so I went through so many different like standard GPs, functional docs, multiple different naturopaths telling me I had chronic fatigue syndrome, all of these like chronic issues that doctors were telling me that I had. And I remember asking doctors specifically, like, is this something to do with like testosterone levels? Is this something like, and all of them pretty much went, no, you're in the range, you're good, you're fine.
You're in the range.
Yeah. And like, so I kept getting told, no, you're in the range, you're fine. Like, it's not that, like, it's this other thing. And, the amount of money I spent on testing and food sensitivity things, and it's MTFHR, it's gene testing, it's all this stuff. And I spent 5 years, I think making significant difference to my health and finding the next thing and then fixing that and my gut health. And I got to 2020 and all of those big, other big things were fixed, but I just felt rubbish. I remember like 2018 to 2020, I'd moved to Brisbane and started my new job. Like, it was hard to get through days and not need a nap, I was working remote, working from home a lot, and it would like get to like 3 in the afternoon. I'm like, oh, I need to sleep. Like, so I just felt really flat and, just didn't really feel like I was getting anywhere. So I kept kind of digging into this thing, and eventually I'd started to listen to and seek out some doctors in the US that were talking about testosterone. And I reached out to one of them and got chatting to a doctor in a hormone clinic in the US, and got chatting. I sent him my results and he came back and he's like, oh mate, he's like, I forget what his wording was, but it was basically going, look, you are absolutely, suboptimal, subclinical, low testosterone. And by that point, I kind of knew that that's what was going on. I had a good feeling that's what was going on. I think I had just prior to that booked in with an Australian men's health, men's hormone clinic, met with them, and they basically went, look, you're in the range. We can't help you. And this US doctor went, look, we treat symptoms. You've got all the symptoms of low testosterone. And so my testosterone levels at that point were 235 nanomoles. Per liter, I think it is. The bottom of the range was 230. So I was 5 points off the bottom. So what I just said before was like the US average testosterone level of between, had gone from 600 to 400. Mine at that point was 235, which is even lower than the average. And, like I said, 5 points off the low range. Now that range shifts as you get older. And with some other data, like, average between 40 should range somewhere between sort of 550 to 400. But as you get older, for a, 85 year old male, that's typically between about 375 ish to 325 is the, average range for a 80 year old man. And that's where I was. And, maybe stop there. But, that's kind of in 2020 where I arrived out of going, oh, fuck, like I'm operating with the testosterone level of an 80-year-old man, essentially.
And just to catch people up, like, you had a childhood where you were not eating whole foods. You didn't really spend a lot of time being super active once you got out of basketball, and then you spent your early 20s partying, and then you totally turned your life around and you almost went the other way, right? Where it was like suddenly you were training twice a day, you were driving 2 or 3 hours to and from work. When you were in the mines, you were doing shift work, and then when you were sleeping, it was like 4 or 5 hours because you'd train in the evening and then you'd wake up early to train before you had to go to work. So like that over multiple years and then suddenly hitting a wall, you know, when you look at it in hindsight, I'm sure that you're going, well, fuck, it was so obvious.
Mm. Oh, totally. Like I lived a very unhealthy life as a kid. You know, I think I've told you, like, there was, you know, a normal Friday night was like I'd buy a 2-liter bottle of Coke and I'd sit at home and play video games, you know. And it's like I'd, you know, just soft drinks, shit food. I'd get home from school and bake cakes and slices and eat a whole box of fish fingers or whatever else was in the house.
Remember fish fingers.
So it was like, yeah, you know, not a healthy youth at all, which was pretty typical, I think, for a lot of households. But yeah, maybe not getting home from school and baking a cake and eating it before mum got home from work. But, you know, yeah, and then obviously, yeah, hitting 18 and going to a pretty wild party phase and drug phase and drinking phase from 18 to 25-ish. But then at, yeah, 25, 26, kind of realizing what I was doing with my life and, yeah, completely 180 change, didn't drink alcohol for 3 years, sorry. You know, and then, yeah, really significant change. But it's like, there's no doubt that in my youth and through, you know, through my 20s has had an impact. Like, you know, and I don't know before that, right, of like my dad was a pretty heavy drinker. And, you know, if I look at now, think about like his body type and his health, it's like he wasn't a healthy person either. So intergenerationally, I don't know what got passed on to me in that way as well, right? And you look at this kind of historical generation on generation dropping of testosterone, like I have no doubt that, you know, that's got an impact of like my dad being a drinker, had a big beer belly, like all of those things.
And, you know, even when I met you, I remember you were pretty much, I think you were close to carnivore at the time. You weren't really eating vegetables. You certainly were not eating carbohydrates. And I remember like we would go and get Italian or you started to buy a pasta and you were like, this is a real treat. And I just remember being like, oh no, I'm like really just bringing you into my carb world. I'm competitive CrossFitter at the time, like just thinking, oh man, I'm being like this bad influence,
but that's,
which like, I actually think you ultimately needed.
Yeah. But that was also that, like, for so long, like I had fat around my stomach, like, and you know, I still do, but it's like, you know, I just couldn't break that away. You know, I just, you know, when I was competing, when I was training before, like CrossFit, like I got to the point that I was ripped. I, you know, had nearly a six pack, and it's like, so I was getting really in shape. But then once I stopped, and you know, I think it's easy to associate it with once I stopped CrossFit that change, but I think it's when I fucked up my health that changed at the end of the day. So, you know, so then for so long, it was like, no matter what, I just had body fat on. I couldn't, no matter what I did, I was eating super low calories when I met you. Like I was probably eating, I think, maybe 2000 calories, you know, and that's
had coaches many times in the past, right? That had gotten like, they couldn't figure out why you couldn't lose weight.
Yeah, and like some very good like bodybuilding coaches that are like nationally, if not internationally, recognized that I'd worked with. That, like, you know, I remember a guy in Brisbane that I worked with, like very well known, super knowledgeable coach. And we got to a point where he said, "Look, mate, I don't know what I can do to help you. You know, no matter what we try, it's not shifting." He would try and push my calories up, I'd put on weight. We'd try and then cut me down, I'd put on weight. And he ended up just saying to me, "Look, you know, I don't want to keep taking your money, but I don't know what to do with you." You know, so,
and, you know, I think people would potentially go, "Oh, well, what about compliance? And like, how closely are you really adhering to the plan?" And let me just let you know that if you watch how Greg and I eat, you would look at me and be like, "Oh man, this bitch has diabetes." I eat far more unhealthy processed foods. I eat far more treats. I've never seen Greg eat dairy milk chocolate. I've never seen him get fast food. I've never seen him. I think I've only seen you have dairy on occasion. I think you eat a little bit of yogurt now. Like the number of things I've never seen you do. I was thinking about it before this podcast and I was like, oh man, I've never, like, I occasionally will randomly just be like, I really want like a bacon and egg McMuffin from McDonald's, or like, I really want a cheeseburger and I'll go get it. So it's like maybe twice a year. I've never seen you do that ever. You don't even have like I really want this. Like if you want to go and get food, it's like, I'm going to go to like Grilled. I'm going to go to like the most amazing fresh Mexican restaurant in Australia called Antojitos. It's like, that's your treat, right? So, you know, I just want to clarify that adherence, compliance, like Greg is an incredibly clean eater to the point where I've been like, no, you need to eat carbohydrates before you train. Like, hey, have some bread. and now I will be proud to take credit for being the one to influence you to have sourdough every day.
And like, and that's been, you know, it's been honestly really frustrating, right? Like it's been, you know, I'll say 4 years, we're talking about 2020, this kind of all became evident, but it's probably, you know, longer before that, like having to just be, and maybe not so much with like eating McDonald's and stuff like that, but probably definitely like carbs and some of that, like McDonald's or, you know, fast food stuff. I haven't eaten that since like I was 25. It's been nearly 10 years. So, or no longer than that, 13 years or something like that. So yeah, that stuff, not as much, but definitely like my tightness around like eating carbs and being scared of some of that stuff. Like I've just been in this place where it's like, I've been trying to, you know, shift my body weight or shift, you know, feel better in the gym, like all of those things. But no matter what I did, nothing worked.
Okay. So then I know, you know, it would have been when we moved to Newcastle and I'd only just started to understand what was really going on. Because I think when I met you, you were struggling, but I didn't know you well enough to understand. And you were always so happy around me that energy didn't seem like a problem. I know that sleep, you were like pedantic around sleep because you would have a really hard time getting a proper night's sleep. And I didn't. So I just didn't really, one, understand, and two, nor could I really empathize with what was going on. So there was a lot of stuff where it was happening, but I wasn't totally aware of it. And it was maybe, I would maybe say like 6 months into us seeing each other that I would notice like you would be flat. And the way that I could tell was that there were some days where you were really good, like much more high energy and silly and goofy and rowdy. And like, I think what I realized is you were like, oh yeah, I feel good today. And then on any day that you weren't like that, which was 90% of the time, that was when I went, oh, okay, Greg's got something wrong. Like there's something like where he's super low energy and really tired. And like, he always feels like he needs to nap and he needs to go and lie down. And like, he has to go to bed really early. Like just a lot of the stuff that I started to kind of pick up on. And so you were listening to a lot of guys who were talking about their testosterone, right?
Yeah. So like, and you know, with my sleep, there was always one of those things where it's like, I still have, and but, you know, back then, like I've had to be really disciplined around sleep because all it takes is that, you know, it's like, you know, like you described, right? It's this fine edge between like, if I did everything right, if I ate good food, got to sleep, you know, early, like did all that and like nailed the routine, then I could feel good. But if I just went to bed half an hour later, or, you know, just had a little bit of a rougher night's sleep, it's like, I would feel rubbish the next day. So, yeah, you know, and, you know, all of that stuff, right? And so, like, I've got a, you know, like I said before, career, you know, demanding career that I need to be pretty mentally switched on, all of those things. And I probably didn't struggle with some of that. Like, I'm a pretty driven person, and so I can switch on and focus and all of those things. But it was like, yeah, the extension of that to the gym and to, you know, other aspects of my life that I definitely felt it. So, yeah, after talking to the doctor in the US, and I suppose this gets into the part where, yeah, look, this feels probably pretty, I think, vulnerable to share, or, you know, even going through like realizing that you've got low testosterone. As a guy, that was really confronting, you know, and it was like, oh, fuck, like, what does that mean? Like, you know, and it's the last thing you kind of, and I said before that people have negative association with testosterone. I don't. You know, I think that's a good thing, both from a health standpoint and many others. So, yeah, sort of went through that a little bit mentally. Had reached out to this doctor in the US, was talking to him, started to look into options. In Australia, it's incredibly hard to, you know, in the US, TRT is very common. Easily prescribed, you find a doctor, you know, if you're low in that range and you've got all of those symptoms, this doctor in the US is like, we treat symptoms, you know, we don't treat numbers, we treat people. And so got chatting to him anyway, you know, started to look at options of sourcing testosterone, and in, I think it would have been 2021-ish, maybe 2022. I started on TRT, kind of low-dose testosterone, really with the intent to get myself back into a healthy range. That wasn't an easy decision. There's all sorts of, if you look around online, there's a bunch of conflicting stories about like it causing health issues and heart issues and, prostate issues and all of this stuff. So I spent a bunch of time, looking into the research, looking into data and, the different studies that point to some of that stuff and trying to learn as much as I could. Obviously fertility was one of those things that I spent time looking at and talking to people and understanding impacts on that as well. Made that decision.
Talked as well. I think I would like to highlight that it wasn't a decision that you excluded me from.
Mm.
And it took a bit for me to kind of feel on board with, because like I'd said, we'd met during lockdown, so you had a lot of downtime. We were both super relaxed, and it wasn't until 6 months and then a year that I was starting to pick up on Greg has low energy days. Greg's low energy days are more frequent than his high energy days. Greg rarely has high energy days, kind of thing. And then you explaining how you felt in the gym, and you explaining like your struggles with your weight, and seeing you go through that as well.
Mm.
And so for me, my immediate resistance to it was around fertility, obviously. Mm. That was a big thing to me, where I was like, what's the long-term effect?
Yeah.
And what does that mean for us? Like, if we do want to have kids, and which we at that point knew that we did, how is that going to impact us? And is it going to make that process really difficult? So there was a lot of I just immediately put that at the front of my argument against it, and kind of hadn't really connected the dots with no, this was something that was going to just help you have good days. It was like your day-to-day is going to be impacted in a really positive way by doing this. And then what was interesting was kind of just talking through it and me drawing a parallel between, and it's not a parallel, this was just that the way that I could understand it better, but in understanding what the pill does, which is the contraceptive pill, it provides progestin and synthetic form of estrogen. And so it essentially gives you a very small dose of those two hormones, so your body will no longer produce those hormones. And then when you remove the synthetic hormones, your body just takes time for the brain, the pituitary gland to start communicating with the ovaries, and then you start to ovulate again. And that for me took 6 months after I got off the pill for that to happen for me. And then another 6 months after I got my period back for it to become regular again. So it just takes time. But for men, it's kind of the same thing. It's like we introduce a hormone, the body will not continue to produce it on its own because it has this other form. So you get all of the effects that hormone would have if you were making it yourself. And then if you remove it, the body just needs to take time to make it on its own again. And so there's, even for things like spermogenesis, it's like 60 days, there's a cycle. It's the same thing for eggs. It's like there's a cycle of time that it takes for them to kind of go through their process. Mm-hmm. And so once I kind of figured that out, it was like, oh, okay. Like I'd been through that. I'd been on the pill and come off it, and my body sorted itself out. And so I felt like I understood that that's what would happen with Greg. And then when you realize the positive benefits that Greg was going to experience every day, it was easily a net positive for me. Like it was immediately like I would argue for testosterone rather than against it. And I totally jumped ships in a sense around my beliefs with using testosterone, because it was no longer in this category of like, oh, it's just like steroids and they're just like dudes, juicing up in the gym. Like that was really my, I guess, association with testosterone, like just dudes who just want to be more jacked or do it to shortcut diet and healthy lifestyle. Like, I think that was my association or the connotations that it had for me. And so when I looked at you and you were doing all the healthy lifestyle, you were doing all the diet, you were doing all the training, you were doing all the sleep, you were doing all the things and had been doing them for, since you stopped CrossFit and started figuring out your health, it had been like 6 years by the time I think I met you, and it still wasn't helping you feel good. It was like, okay, why wouldn't you do this?
Yeah. And I think I remember one of our early conversations, there was definitely, I felt that sort of, you know, your association of like taking testosterone with like cheating and with like almost like the, you know, because it is attached so much to like the performance enhancing drug kind of thing. And like, I remember one of those early conversations with you where like, yeah, I think there was like almost a, yeah, like that maybe shortcutting thing, or, you know, thinking that it was just about like, yeah, I don't know. I just remember there was sort of resistance from that angle as well around your feelings towards people using it, you know, in the gym or to be better in the gym or whatever it is as well. So.
And I think I've been accused of using steroids as well.
Yeah.
You know, like I've been accused of taking drugs, taking performance enhancing drugs, taking stuff for my body, taking stuff to build muscle. So like I've spent many, many years being like, fuck no, absolutely not. Mm. Like, no, like and getting very defensive around it. And so building up that negative association where I have my version, which is I'm, you know, like natural or whatever the fuck you want to call it, but like I've never used any kind of drug. So I was then also attached to like, I'm proud that I've done this on my own, quote unquote, on my own, but I have not been through what you went through and what you put your body through. It's just like, it's a different whole nother set of experiences and, you know, psychological and physiological experiences that you've been through.
And that, you know, to transition to like, yeah, like then going on to test, like it's like, you know, the difference was like, you know, I just thought in my brain about like, you know, the steam engine that, you know, people are feeding coal into it and that's what powers the engine, right? And it's like, that's the difference. It's like, you know, without test, it's not for vanity. It's not just for like being in the gym. It's vital. To energy, to living, for, you know, particularly for men, there's so much of like, you know, just drive to do anything that it is the thing that fuels us in a lot of ways. And women have test as well, and it performs the same function, but to actually experience the difference from for a very long time, and probably gradually over the years, my testosterone level reducing from whatever it was originally, and I don't know what it was originally, you know, the first time, and I've got my bloods in front of me, the first time I tested it was in 2021. I think I probably do have some older ones than that, but that's all I've got in front of me. You know, it's probably gradually reducing over time, and so like I didn't probably realize, but then going on to testosterone, it was like, oh, whoa, like this is what I should feel like. Like this is what, you know, waking up in the morning, like with energy and going, oh, like I feel good at like going to the gym and like finding like just that competitive like drive again to like want to be better and want to like get stuff done. And being like you said before, like one of the big things is like that. I have, you know, a big internal monologue. You know, there's a lot of people talking online about, you know, different types of internal monologue at the moment. It's like I've always had a lot of self-talk in my brain, but the self-talk changed. It was very different. And, you know, I remember like just crying really easily before and some of those things, and then switching to a much more positive, like driven self-talk, still self-critical, but like, there was
an asshole to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. but yeah, it was just completely different. And, you know, for the first time in, you know, I keep wanting to say in like 5 or 6 years, but the reality was like the last couple of years of, or probably at least 12 months of me doing CrossFit, like I wasn't getting stronger. You know, I remember doing like small of like squat cycle because I'm like, I'm just not getting stronger. And so I did small of to try and build my squat. And it's like, I just wasn't working. And like, I would just end up injuring myself more. And just so
throw on more volume.
Yeah. Cause that's what I was like, oh, well, okay. I need to do more stuff. Right. And it just didn't work. The wheels fell off. So yeah, to then find that place over the last sort of, yeah, to 2.5 years kind of thing where that completely switched in my brain, you know, for the first time getting stronger in the gym, you know, feeling like I'm getting fitter in the gym, noticing my body change, you know, self-talk, you know, changing, like all of those things. It was like a light switch.
So like some of the logistics, where do you get it from? Because you can't get it prescribed in Australia. You can get, I know that you actually have a prescription for cream. You can get testosterone cream. It's applied topically. And there's a bunch of rules around using it. You can't be around women or touch me. You can't have sex. Like there's just, it's impractical. And then what are the dosages that you've used, and have you had to do anything to counter any other consequences of increasing testosterone? So for example, estrogen, like what's been that sort of adjustment phase? And you've been using it, you were using it for, I think you ended up using it for 2 years.
Yeah. From 2021 until the end of last year or the start of this year. Yeah. So especially to start with, it took a lot of stuffing around, and you know, your blood's every sort of 2 months, you know, trying to get that level right. And you know, there is there was reactions to start with like estrogen levels rising and other things shifting around as you sort of find what is the right level, right dosage, all of those things. And look, some of that is because you're right, it's like I can't get a doctor in Australia to work with me on it. There are people that now I've got, you know, that are either, you know, involved in health, or like I said, the doctors in America that will give advice, but I can't get testosterone through people in America. I did find someone in Australia that, prescribed testosterone cream. I felt really concerned about that because of the risk of that. You know, there's so many rules and things around it where it's like, you know, you can't, I've got to make sure you don't touch clothes I've put on, you don't touch my body, I don't lay on the bed sheets, like, and you're meant to put the cream on twice a day. So it's like, just logistically, it's a nightmare. So there's, you know, the options for men are cream, there's pellets, or injection. Are the three. And the pellets, I think from Maria, like they insert it under the skin, and it, like, I think I haven't looked into the pellets heaps. I know they're more common in America, where they actually insert it under the skin, I think, and it slowly like seeps out over a period of time, or injections. So, so that's, you know, as far as the biggest thing I did, like I changed, like I was injecting it, and the biggest thing I shifted was doing it from once a week into muscle to every 2 days into fat. And look at like,
and reducing the amount, like spreading out the same amount over the week instead.
So smaller amount, but every 2 days. Now, having
what did
to
you end up, what did you, sorry? What's the dose that you normally use now?
I'm not sure whether talking dosages, because I think like I don't want to guide anyone else to think like they should just go and do the same.
I think what I'm trying to establish is you're not pumping a shit ton of testosterone into yourself.
No, it's
a pretty low amount.
Yeah, small amount. Like I've had friends over the years that are bodybuilders that do like bodybuilding dosages. It's nothing like that. My test levels have stayed within the healthy range. Apart from like I said, I've got my test in front of me. It went over twice, and then I pulled back dosage to get it back down to the range. So I'm not trying to like push the needle. Maybe that's the wrong word. Push the dosages to see how fucking high I can get it, right? And like, go, okay, like let's go. I just want to be in the normal healthy range for people my age. And when I've exceeded that, I've pulled back to get back to that place, because, you know, like with anything, I think that, you know, you start to go into super physiological dosages, there probably is negative, you know, feedback loops and things like that, that your body's not used to dealing with levels like that. So, it's never been about, you know, trying to, like I said, like friends that are bodybuilders that are like, they're going wild with like grams worth a week. It's like a small fraction of that.
Mm. Yeah, it's a shame that it's so hard to get your hands on. I've had one client who actually has managed to get what is it called? When you inject it.
Yep, intramuscular.
But you do it into fat, right?
Yeah, subcutaneous.
Subcutaneous, that was what I was looking for. So he's managed to get a doctor that prescribes testosterone so that he can inject it. And he was like, I've got a doctor that is a, like, he is a really cool guy. Plus he jumped through many, many hoops for me. I've been with him for like, you know, a decade. So it's like, unless you've got a doctor that is on board with testosterone, first of all, which many of them are just not, and then are willing to go through all the paperwork, jump through all the loops and do it for you because they really believe that you need it. I would say that it's borderline impossible to get testosterone actually prescribed. That's not great.
Unless you're outside of the range. And like I said, the bottom of the range for men my age is equivalent to what a, you know, I'll say quote unquote healthy 80-year-old, 70-year-old should be somewhere in that range. So yeah, like I said, my result in June 2021 was 235 for free testosterone. And at the same time for total testosterone, it was 15.4 nanomoles versus picomoles for the free testosterone. That result of 15.4 was actually, you know, quote unquote, in the range, and so was my free testosterone.
Right? You know, and that's the whole thing with the in the range thing. Fucking, you see someone who's low, bottom of the range, and it's like, oh, you're in the range, you're fine. Meanwhile, there is this broad, like, ability to be 200 or is it 800's top of the range?
Yeah, like, depending on what labs, yeah, around that.
So you're, like, talking about fucking, it doesn't make sense that that's what we operate from. Not to mention that the ranges are established by averages, not actually by optimal health. So it's like, wouldn't we actually want the ranges to be higher so that we can aim higher? And not to say that we go so far off the deep end that we've got all these dudes juicing up like a bodybuilder, but just to help people that are in fact not in the upper part of the range, like that should be the gold standard at a minimum.
You look at like 5, you know, picomoles per liter, which is this tiny unit, 5 of them less and I would be seen as outside of the range and treatable, you know, and that's where like when the way we view numbers is so ridiculous, right? You go, well, you're in the range. Okay. But if I just adjust that, like if I just feel a little bit worse, like I'm okay. Like you, then you'll treat me rather than going, you've got all the same symptoms as someone that's come to me at this number. Look, yeah, we should treat you. And I think particularly once you actually dig into the research around testosterone, the research that points to bad, worse outcomes with prostate and worse outcomes with heart issues, they were shitty science and shitty studies that I forget the details of now, but I remember looking into them and it was like the heart disease ones were these like unhealthy males. It was a tiny number of people and they basically like gave them testosterone. I think they were either like already close to having heart disease or something. I forget now, but if I can find them, I'll put them in the show notes. But it was like they were already heading down a really shitty health path and then they gave them testosterone and then went, oh, look, they had heart attacks. Well, I suppose testosterone is bad for you. And I think it was the same for the prostate cancer one. It was like this small pool of guys that had high numbers already and, you know, whatever it was. So it's just based on shitty science. And you go, well, so whether I'm at 230, whatever that number, generally, you know, there is a recognition that testosterone is heart protective. It is good for your health. So why wouldn't you treat it, right? And in America now, it's readily available, super common that guys are on TRT because it's seen as heart like health protective and good for mental health, physical health, all of those things. So it's just in Australia that we have such a risk-averse way that we treat numbers, and that's how the medical system is set up. It's like the risk for a doctor of treating someone that is in a within the range, the risks are just too far. Even if you're a doctor that wants to treat people, they're just not allowed.
You've had kind of an interesting experience lately with having experienced all the effects of being on testosterone, and now that we are trying for a baby, having come off it, and you've been off it for fully a month and a half now, I believe. And so, yeah, go ahead and talk about what that has kind of been like for you.
Well, I think in the same way that coming onto it was like a light switch, this has been probably just really eye-opening to be like, oh, shit, that's right. This is what I used to feel like. you know, throw in some stress around us moving house and, you know, stuff needing to be done here and coming back from holidays into work and what that being busy, like all of those.
Trying to make a baby.
Yeah, trying to make a baby, like all of that life stuff that's kind of going on. Like, but and one of the things when you come off test is that, you know, like you said before, it actually takes your body a little while to go, oh, that's right, we've got a job to do here, don't we? We've got to make, there's something we're meant to make. We haven't done that for a couple of years. What was it? What's the ingredients? What's the recipe? We don't really know. So it takes your body a little while to kind of remember what it's meant to do. And you actually, for a short period of time, completely crash your natural, you don't have natural production because you've been exogenously creating it. So you basically push yourself to zero for a period of time. So that is probably one thing of like going through that period. Like there was a week where I'd sort of ended up talking to you about it and, you know, and one of my friends as well, because I just kind of went, oh, like I feel terrible. And I think I remember saying to you one morning after the gym, like, oh, I think I'm in for a bit of a rough ride. Like this is going to be tough, because I was in the gym and just like the internal chatter in my head was terrible. Like I think I'd had a really bad night's sleep the night before. Like I was back to sleeping worse, you know, all of this stuff. And I'm like, oh no, this is going to be a bit of a ride to go through. And I think that really bad week only lasted a week. And then I feel like I've balanced out a little bit. And I had my bloods done. I got them back about 2 weeks ago now, and my levels are back to, slightly below what that original one was. So now I'm back at 231.4 as of 1st of March. So I'm still technically within the range according to my first test result that I had. I think on this lab it actually says I'm outside of the range. But you know, according to the original one I did, I would have still been okay. But I feel, you know, I feel very flat. You know, by the time I said to you last night, like we're cooking dinner at 6:30, I'm like, my eyes hurt, like I'm ready to sleep. So yeah, I think just flicking that switch back the other way, like my, you know, how I feel in the gym, my strength in the gym, like all of that stuff in the couple of weeks leading up to the Open, I'm like, oh, I feel terrible training. Like I've still been training, but yeah, just strength has dropped, my, all of those things I talked about, you know, the drive and sort of that, that push, you know, you feel, I felt that just switch off, essentially, and kind of go back to like, oh yeah, that's right, this is what I used to feel like before.
Yeah, and it's only amplified by the fact that we only get a chance to try for a kid once a month. Yeah. So we get, you know, it's 24 hours. You get a little bit of a window prior to that where you can kind of take advantage of the fact that I know I'm going to ovulate, but then you wait 2 weeks to see, to test, to see if I'm pregnant. And then if I'm not, it's another 2 weeks before we get to try again. And I always think back to the lockdowns in Melbourne when they shut down IVF clinics and women were just fucking outraged because it was like, oh no, but it's only 2 weeks. And they're like, you don't understand. We're on round three of IVF and this is when I ovulate and this is when the egg collection has to happen. If we don't, you fuck everything. But I have a lot of empathy for them now. But yeah, it's a brutally long process of hurry up and wait with all of it, because you can't test immediately, you can't start trying and expect conception to happen immediately, because there are windows of times that it has to happen. And I know that you and I have both been talking about it, because it's like, you know, we did start probably a little earlier than what would have been successful, but I a big part for me was that I wanted to get the ball rolling because I knew that it was going to take a while. Even though, you know, you hope you're going to fluke it and you hope it's going to work. Yeah. It's like, which is why preconception was on my brain last year, where I'm like, we need to get on top of this. And we've been having conversations the whole time, but I know that, you know, the conversations that we've had recently have been tricky around how you're feeling about the delay that we, I guess not delay, but about the fact that it might be 6 months that you have to deal with how your body is feeling, and the added pressure of like, it takes a long time and we both want to have a kid, and it's frustrating when you don't fall pregnant, you know, like it's this weird thing. I've spent my whole life trying not to get pregnant, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm not pregnant. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just been this interesting, like you're almost trying to investigate something that you can't investigate as well, right? Like we've done all the things and it's actually just a waiting game at this point. Like we've, both of us have taken all the tests. Both of us have done all the analysis. You've got the dude, you and I are both talking to the same dude about all of our blood tests. You've got your protocol for post-test. Like you've done the sperm analysis. Like we've done everything. We know everything about what's happening with our bodies. And now it's just, okay, give it time. Yeah. It's like, and I know that that's been hard, especially because we had that conversation way back at the beginning, right? Like there was that conversation around like, well, fuck, what about fertility? And so now, you know, it's just coming to terms with like, yeah, but ultimately it was what you needed. And I would argue still need, we just have to take time off in order to have a baby.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the person that you mentioned that, you know, has been helping me with, you know, testing and just, you know, some of that stuff through this is like, you know, originally when I spoke to him, like there was an option of like stay on. And even the doctor in the US that I'd spoken to, like they'd said, look, you can stay on test and then start to use some other peptides and other things to sort of support what is referred to as PCT, post-cycle therapy, very normal, very regular thing that bodybuilders will do after a cycle. It's basically going through a PCT protocol that I'm going through now. And that's really just to help your system restart and do its thing naturally. You know, my test level, like I said, has bounced back to where it was, but things like spermogenesis and that cycle, that can just take a little bit longer to restart and get back to where it needs to get to. So yeah, I did have the option of like staying on, but I made the choice to completely come off because I think that's probably the faster route. And talking to, you know, the guy that's been helping me yesterday, he said, look, I think it's really great that you made that decision because, you know, it, you know, where we are and a bit of a road ahead to try and sort some of that stuff out. So yeah, I think that I know that I'm going to feel shitty for a little while. I know that, you know, I'm not going to feel my best and not going to feel my strongest and all that stuff, but that's not the priority right now. The priority is, you know, us planning to have a family. And, you know, I did it before. I felt like shit for 5 or 6 years and managed okay. And, you know, still kept up with life. And, you know, I know I'm doing the same now, but yeah, it's just, that's what I need to do. So, but yeah, I think like really why I wanted to do this and, you know, is kind of unsure as what I was about talking about it all, because I think, you know, there is still a lot of stigma and it's still, you know, obviously not legal and I've kind of had to go around the medical system to do what I'm doing. But yeah, like you said, it's, I've felt a level of like energy and, you know, vitality, you know, to use that word, for the last 2 and a bit years, that's how you should feel in life. And I think for any other men that are out there struggling, like I'm not saying, hey, go and get on test and, you know, but if you're feeling shitty, you're feeling, you know, some of the stuff that I was talking about where it's like your, you know, mental thoughts, your energy, like drive, all of those things is suffering, like go and get testosterone tested. And if your doctor says you're in the range, you're fine, ask him to look at the test, look at the numbers and see where you're at and really understand
what the range is and where you are.
Get a copy of your results. Like the amount of people, even some guys at the gym, like I have actually been open with some of my, you know, closest friends about what, you know, my situation and that I have been taking tests. You know, they've had testosterone checks done because they've got some of those issues and some of those symptoms. And when I've asked about like, what were your numbers? They're like, oh, I didn't get a copy of it. Like the doctor just told me I'm in the range and that's it. I'm like, always get a copy of your results. Like get your power back when it comes to your doctor, ask for a copy of the results and ask questions. Be like, hey, you said I'm in the range, but I'm right on the bottom line there. What does that mean? And what are my options? How can I help that? Because there are natural ways to help your testosterone. I tried a bunch of them, you know, and it didn't make any kind of meaningful difference. I've got friends that have and have managed to do other things. So yeah, I think just, you know, it's an issue. It's something that affects more men, I think, that either are talking about it or aware of it. And I think it's a, you know, a thing that's really important for our health and well-being as men. So that's why I've decided to kind of be open about it. And, yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad that you did.
Thanks.
I think there's just so many men that are dealing with it that aren't talking about it. And the body keeps score.
It does.
The body keeps score. You're not getting away with it. I know you think you are, but check yourself before you wreck yourself. Come and talk to me. Come and talk to Craig. Yeah. Or go and talk to Ben Kant, who we are working with. Benny Lifts on Instagram. I post about him all the time. He talks a lot about this kind of stuff and the process that he goes through with his clients. So go check him out. He has a podcast as well, and super knowledgeable guy who is actually someone who's willing to help people, unlike a lot of, and I'm not going to say doctors, but that's kind of who I was thinking about.
I'm not going to say doctors, not but I'm doctors. Kind of going to heavily insinuate doctors. if anyone does want to reach out, because I know that it can be particularly, like, I think guys just aren't, we don't talk about this stuff to guys, right? But if there's any guys out there that are, you know, going through the same thing, think they are, and want to chat to someone, no judgment from me, because obviously I've been through it, I'm going through it. Open always to people reaching out to me and having a chat as well.
Yeah, and we're on attempt number 3 next week for Baby Wolf. Woo! Bring on the Baby Wolf. Christmas baby if I get pregnant next month.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't have the same birthday as me. I won't be upset if I don't get pregnant
next month. All right, guys, thank you for listening, and we will see you on the next one.
Thank you. Bye.